Okay, I'm going to call to order this first meeting of the Joint Interim Task Force on Apprenticeship and State Contracting. I am State Representative Michael Dembro. I represent Northeast Portland out to Park Rose. That's House District 45. I chair the House Committee on Higher Education Workforce Development, which this bill came through, and I'm very pleased to be the House co-chair as part of this committee and of this task force. And we have really important and I think potentially exciting, hopefully not too contentious work to do. Very important work, I believe. And the process that we have is we start off by having an organizational meeting of the task force, at which time we adopt committee rules, task force rules, and just go through and introduce ourselves and indicate not only who you are and what you do, but what you hope will come out of this process of the task force. Obviously, that's going to become clearer and clearer as the process goes on, but it would be really useful just to hear your initial hit on you know, what you see as the value of the process that we're going through. Okay. So in front of you, you should have a set of proposed rules for the task force. Chip, you want to move?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the task force rules as presented by committee staff.
Okay. Co-Chair Shields has moved adoption of the task force rules. Let's just take a minute to look at them, and then we'll answer any questions.
I think the biggest difference, Mr. Chair, that some people who participated on other forms of governmental operation before may be unaware of is that in our setting, a motion does not require a second. That's usually the biggest change you'll see from compared to, say, a city council meeting or something along those lines.
Right. Okay, this looks good.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I see reference to a quorum. Is there anything that speaks to how many members could meet off-site or in between committees? Do we risk having a quorum then? I mean, is that something we need to be careful for? Because I'm sure all of us will be talking in between the regularly scheduled meetings.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And let me turn that question over to Patrick. And everyone, just before we begin, Patrick Brennan will be our administrator for the task force, comes with a great deal of experience. We'll have him tell us more about it.
That is the thing, Mr. Chair. That's a good question. In terms of public meeting law, when there's a majority or when there's a quorum of members of a group present, if there's enough that they could do actual business, you're required to be compliant with public meeting law. In this case, currently we have 12 members appointed to this group. Eventually, I believe the total number will be 14, but at this point there's 12 members appointed. So there can be no more than six of you at any given time talking about something in particular. So if you have a conference call, for example, offline, outside of a meeting, you're limited to six.
Okay.
Is what it is. So with a group this big, it's helpful. Three-member groups, it's very difficult because then you can't have two people on the phone talking about it at the same time. This group, the number will be six. So a quorum for us to do business currently is seven.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Yes.
Are we making questions on the proposed rules?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I guess point number eight calls for a majority of the appointed members required to approve recommendations.
I wonder if we might submit, I mean, as we try to work towards a solution here that is lasting and transcendent and hopefully provides solutions to this issue of apprenticeship in Oregon, I would submit that I think a consensus might be a better way, objective for us to work towards rather than just simply a simple majority. I think it would be best if we all could, you know, if we can come away all feeling good about what we've been able to accomplish. I think the prospects of that being a lasting and long-lived decision or you know, improvement is going to be much better. So that would be my recommendation, sir.
I think you raise a very good point. I think all of us here would not want to see just a simple majority for anything that we recommend. These, you know, we're talking about a real diversity of mm-hmm. opinion potentially, and we want to try to settle on something. I don't know that I would put that into the rules necessarily, but I know that would be my intention, would be that anything that we recommend is going to need a strong majority, or else we keep working at it. I don't know, Chip.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's certainly the intention. And I would agree to, you know, the rules are set by precedent with committee administration. I'm comfortable leaving them as they are and just knowing in good faith that that's where I think the task force should head.
We want to come up with something that's going to last. And, you know, sometimes you can get something through with a bare majority and then, you know, a week later the cast changes and... that's not what we want. We want something that will really stand the test of time, I think. Patrick, you want to comment?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chairs, in this case, were it to become the desire of the committee to amend the rules, at some future meeting we could do that. It would probably be helpful if before such time I could consult with the parliamentarians about how best to make that work, how best to word that up. But for the time being, given that for this meeting we're not going to be doing anything in the way of recommendations, I think, you know, but I can look into that if it becomes the desire of the committee to do so.
I'm just going to add my two cents. I don't know how contentious this task force is going to be. Back when I was a county commissioner, we worked on some water issues with ag and environmental groups and our water resources at the local level, and it looked like that could be a real contentious thing, and we worked off consensus only, and it was amazing how that group worked and took a lot of fear out of somebody advantage this, advantage that. So my experience would be consensus works really well in these kind of things.
Great. So, Patrick, you'll research some options.
That's for us.
Sure.
Good. Yes.
I guess my question then was, to that end, then Patrick's going to look in to see if we can change the rule to be consensus.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I will look into that at the chair's direction. But also, there is nothing in the rules prohibiting us from choosing to operate under a consensus model, even though the rules require us to have majority members. Obviously, if we operate by consensus, that would, by definition, mean we would have a majority in support. So, but I will look into that.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Great. Okay. With that, do we have consensus on these rules? Okay, I sense that we do. Okay, these rules are adopted. Okay, why don't we just start down at that end, Gene? And let me just say, first of all, you know, on behalf of the legislature, thank you very much for volunteering. I hope you all volunteered to be on this task force. And assuming that you did, you know, it's we really appreciate the time that you're willing to put into it, the expertise that you bring to it, because that's what we need. We need real-world practitioners to help us come up with any recommendations that we make. So, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Gene Kidd. I work for the Operating Engineers, International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 701. I've been a member for 27 years on staff, about 6 years on field staff supervisor. So I look over many issues for the local. I support strongly the training center and have been very vigilant and very involved in the apprenticeship program since I've been in the operating engineers. I believe in it. I strongly support it. And I appreciate being here to further support JETC and apprenticeship programs.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Ron Robbins. I'm the regional manager for the Carpenters in Oregon, Southwest Washington. I also sit on our statewide JETC committee. I've been involved in the building trades for over 30 years. In that time, I've worked with and mentored and been involved in apprenticeship programs. I taught taught at our training center for some years, worked with pre-apprenticeship groups, and as a path to apprenticeship. And so this is a subject I'm very passionate about, and I'm glad to be here working on this team.
Thanks.
My name's Tom Girding. I'm owner of Girding Companies and also owner and president of T. Girding Construction Company, located down in Corvallis. We do work throughout the state and portions of Washington as well. Also, I happen to be this year president of AGC, and so I wear that hat as well. And desire coming out of this, I think, in, to summarize, is something 10 years from now we all look back on and say that was a great task force and we put something in place that was really well thought out and smart. From AGC standpoint, we do represent such a broad spectrum of geography, size of contractors, types of contractors, open shop, union, small companies, large companies, all of that. And so our concern and my individual concern is making sure that we do put something in place that that really does an advantage one entity over another. That's important to us from an industry standpoint. And I think that's the piece that, as we look back a number of years from now, will be key to its success. So that's my end.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Carl Redman with Bear Electric, and I'm also the immediate past president of Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon. I sit on the Area 2 Inside Electrical JETC committee, and I'm fortunate to be the largest training agent and employ the most apprentices of that program. It's very important to our trade specifically, as well as all construction trades, that we get more people into apprenticeship programs. You know, our future in construction is dependent upon skilled tradespeople. And that's my interest for being here. I also formerly served on the Prevailing Wage Advisory Committee for a couple terms and have that perspective as well. For me, it's very important that we do achieve recommendations here on consensus. Other groups I've been involved with that operated that way was very successful. So hopefully what we come with out of this is a good direction to encourage skilled craftspeople training in apprenticeship programs in Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mark Johnson. I live in Hood River, and I represent House District 52. Excited to be here. Anxious to work with you all to try to bring about a better result for this kind of vexing issue, I think, that's been in the midst of our construction industry for a while. So I'm confident we can get there. I think there are certainly best practices that we can learn from elsewhere in the state and out of the state. Over the last couple of years, I think the legislature's done some pretty good work in terms of trying to take on and tackle some of these large issues. I had a little bit of work to do with the CMGC task force. It started like about 2 years ago, and it culminated with some legislation in the last session. We also passed a bill dealing with the retention issue, another one of these that's kind of been out there and needed to be cleared up and made
right, I think, in a way that works for Oregon companies and so forth. So I'm hopeful that this task force can continue in that same light and take whatever time it's necessary to get to a solution, if you will, that will be good for the long haul, and just take whatever time we have to take to get it right. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm committed to be here for the long haul. So looking forward to working with you all.
I'm Chip Shields. I represent North and Northeast Portland in the Oregon State Senate. I've been involved with several job placement and training organizations over the course of my career. My first job in Portland was with the Youth Employment Institute, and then I was the founder of an organization called Better People, which is a job placement group for people who are in recovery from addiction, people who've had breaches with the law. And then I also was very proud to work for Oregon Tradeswomen Incorporated in 2006 in between legislative sessions. So a lot of my interest comes from seeing the apprentice hours and the apprenticeship training be not just a way for people to make a good living, but also to be a pipeline for minority contracting and making sure that we have qualified people who can then go on and start their own businesses as well. So I'm just really, really excited about that opportunity to work on both the apprenticeship issue and also that issue being a pipeline for increasing minority participation and women participation in the construction industry.
I am Chuck Thompson from, I represent Hood River counties, Multnomah and Clackamas counties. I got asked to be on this committee, I think, because what I try to do is listen to both sides the best I can and then help the group come to a consensus decision. So I'm willing to put in the time to get us there.
I'm Sandy Trainer. I am the owner and president of Kodiak Pacific Construction. I'm primarily a public contractor, heavy highway. I'm very interested in being or participating in this process because I want to assure we have a fair and successful process that we go through. Training is huge, and good training is even huger. I'm a certified apprentice trainer for the City of Portland. I've been on the workforce chaired 3 years at AGC and continue to be on that. Workforce development is extremely important for our industry, and so we have to make sure or try to ensure that whatever is implemented in this comes out to be a successful process for any of the new people entering into the industry.
Thank you. I'm Rod Belisle. I'm the director of the NECA IBW Electrical Training Center. We're located in Portland. We serve contractors in 10 counties in Oregon and 5 counties in Southwest Washington. I'm an apprentice graduate, journeyman electrician, and have been training, working with apprentices for about 13 years now. And I'm excited to be part of this to make sure that apprentices that enter into the industry are represented in a way that they can be successful. You know, I think any type of legislation regarding apprentices, hopefully we'll always have the apprentices' best interest in mind, and that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Hi, John Moldis with the Oregon State Building Trades Council. I'm a journeyman bricklayer and stonemason by trade. I started my apprenticeship in February of 1978, so I've now done a good job of dating myself on the public record. I've served 2 terms on the State Apprenticeship Council in the past. During the last session, I was very involved with not only this Senate bill, but with 2 House bills that were introduced regarding apprenticeship, and I eventually got parked into this vehicle, and so I'm very pleased to be part of this task force. I agree with the earlier comments about consensus. I think apprenticeship, on face value, you never find anybody that's against apprenticeship or against apple pie or against motherhood. It's when you start getting into the details and the different geographical areas of the state and the different types of contractors and size and scope is where you start getting a lot of different input from a lot of different people on how this should look. So I think it'd be really important to listen to each other and respect different points of view and see what we can come up with collectively. And I would just close, I think, with a remark that Rod made. And in the past, I was a business agent, an organizer. I was the apprenticeship coordinator for Bricklayers Local 1 for a couple years, and now with the State Building Trades Council. And I have a lot of respect for contractors that are training agents. And so I don't mean this in a disrespectful fashion, but I just think as long as decisions are made on what's right for the apprentice that's out there working in the field and trying to not only make a living but to learn a career, as long as we base our decisions on what's right for that apprentice, then I think we'll be successful. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Patrick, you want to tell us a little about yourself?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Patrick Brennan, committee administrator since 2003. The last session I staffed the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation, which is where Senate Bill 1782 originated. So that plus having staffed the aforementioned CMGC work group during the 2011-12 interim somehow compelled me to ask to staff this task force, despite having been warned off by a few people, but I stuck with it. Anyway, looking forward to it. I've gotten to know a few of the folks who are at the table and a few of the other folks who are in the audience. I find it a pretty interesting and important subject area, so looking forward to it. Sure.
Great.
And I'm here to support anybody who's on the group. Anybody who's in the room can always contact me. Our contact information's pretty easy to find on the legislative website. Y'all have received emails from me, so feel free to contact me anytime if you have any questions about process, who to talk to, anything like that.
Excellent. Thank you, Patrick. Let me just say a couple of things about myself. I'm drawn to this work both from my professional life and my legislative life. You know, my professional life, I've been a longtime community college faculty member, really been engaged in and committed to people getting ahead in their lives. The value of career technical education is, extremely important to me. I've seen the good work that pre-apprenticeship programs can do in getting people who are moving in a direction that maybe we wouldn't want them to move in into a direction that we definitely want them to move in. And it's going to be really important for us to do whatever we can to have healthy apprenticeship programs that provide those kind of outlets. My legislative world, I chair the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. And, you know, something we have been talking a lot in this state about something called 40-40-20, right, where, you know, we want 40% of Oregonians to have a bachelor's degree or higher, 40% to have a degree or training post-high school, and 20% to have a high school diploma. I believe that apprenticeship is a key element in that middle 40. I'm asked all the time, so when you talk about 40-40-20, how about apprenticeship? Apprenticeship is, from my perspective, the gold standard of that middle 40. People who, through training in the classroom and in the field, are able, really to provide for themselves and their families and to help drive the Oregon economy. So, I really see apprenticeship as a key part of post-secondary education. And, that's kind of the lens that I'm going to be coming through. Obviously, the other really important thing is that we have the trained workforce that we need to do the work that needs to be done. We all know that current workers are getting older, it seems, year by year, and we need to have replacements for them coming up, being trained to the very highest standards so that we can build good bridges and good roads that won't fall apart. So, with that, I'm going to close the organizational meeting. On the agenda, we really, you know, what we have is just clarifying what the charge of the committee is, of the task force is, and doing some talking about timelines and logistics. Okay. And so you have before you the final version of Senate Bill 782, and I think one of the important things that the bill does is it starts off with a series of findings, kind of the principles that led to the enactment of this legislation. And actually, speaking of the enactment of this legislation, I neglected to say we wouldn't be here today if it weren't for many of the people who are in the audience with us today. And I want to thank all of you for instigating, for shepherding, for helping with this process. And it's great to see you here. I hate to say it, but your work's not over yet either. We're going to need your feedback as we go through this process. So we have... We have at the beginning of 782 this series of findings, and I thought we would just take a quick look at these findings, these sort of principles, and just get your response to them. So the Legislative Assembly finds that, first of all, apprenticeship is an important component of post-secondary education and workforce development in Oregon. Second, the state of Oregon has a strong interest in encouraging apprenticeship on public construction projects. Third, many states, including Washington and California, have adopted apprenticeship utilization standards for public construction projects. Fourth, Oregon may have an interest in initiating apprenticeship utilization standards for state agency construction projects and eventually for all construction projects that use significant state or other public funds. Five, questions remain concerning A, the economic impact of minimum apprenticeship utilization standards on state agencies and other public entities, and how best to minimize potential negative economic impacts. Okay. B, the use of incentives. Questions remain concerning the use of incentives and disincentives to encourage compliance with apprenticeship utilization standards. C, oversight of contractor compliance with apprenticeship utilization standards, what kind of oversight we need or should have. D, whether apprenticeship utilization standards should apply only to general contractors or also to subcontractors and individual crafts. E, how best to create incentives to develop a more diverse workforce. And F, the appropriateness of a single statewide apprenticeship utilization standard instead of a range of standards for each location or type of construction project. Okay. And to the end of finding answers to these questions, as it were, that's what this task force is all about. And so we're certainly going to want to get a sense of, you know, what the answers to these might be as we're making any recommendations. And then, you know, those are echoed in, you know, if you move to page 2 of the bill for the charge of the task force, that's in number 2, where, you know, really... That's where we're being asked to answer these questions and to make recommendations about these. So the charge also says that, you know, in addition to the expertise that's At this dais right now, we may consult with experts, hear testimony from affected persons, and otherwise collect data and information necessary to carry out the task force's duties. And if need be, expand the membership of the task force, if, you know, if we feel that that would help us to do the findings that we need to do, to reach consensus, you know, whatever. If we feel that as we go down the road, we actually need more voices at the table, we do have that option. So that, I think that's the highlight of the legislation and the charge. Would you say, Patrick?
I do agree, Mr. Chair. The one thing I think I mentioned it briefly before is that there are two additional appointments that will be made. Mm-hmm. The governor's staff is going to recommend a state contracting agency representative and a local contracting agency representative that will also sit on this task force. So we will have two more members probably at the next meeting, at least already, without any additional action by the co-chairs of this group appointing additional ones.
Yeah, I think we would all agree those are very useful voices to have. Yeah. Okay, any response to this? Any comments, any questions, regarding these issues?
I guess I have a question. Yes, so I can learn more about this. Will we be able to get information like from Patrick on what some of these standards are right now, and so we get a little more, some members of the group get more background? Do we just ask Patrick?
And Mr. Chair, I was in kind of talking over this with some other folks. We're hypothesizing the possibility of actually bringing folks in to address this task force as well, to in an informational setting as well. I mean, the bill itself in Section 2, for example, says that the task force will review and evaluate apprenticeship utilization standards and programs that are already in use by ODOT in the state of Washington. So, okay. I mean, that's one potential starting point, is to review kind of what they're doing, and to do that by having them come in and provide a presentation. Mm-hmm. So, but I can provide that offline as well.
Okay.
Great.
Yes, John.
Well, thank you. That was the first question that I had. Is that, you know, I know Washington State has had apprenticeship standards, utilization standards in place for some time. It's my understanding they started with a governor's executive order that was pretty narrow, and then over time have built it out. So I think that would be useful to have that that information. Going to timelines, I mean, I don't know if the chairs have thought how often we're going to meet, the length of the meetings, you know, where, but I think that'd be a good thing to talk about today.
Yeah. Did I, Mr. Chair? We did discuss that, and I think the committee minister said at minimum we anticipate meeting every time that the legislative days are happening. To go beyond that would require some approval by the presiding officers.
That's for us meeting as a task force. Now, that's not to say that it wouldn't be value to have committees, you know, groups working on different elements and making recommendations. And I think that does make sense. One of the things that I was hoping to do today was to hear from some of you who were part of that earlier task force on public contracting, just to get a sense from you of what, in your opinion, worked well in that process and what you might advise us to avoid, or, you know, how things, what lessons there were to be learned from that. And that also may help us as we figure out just what our timeline kind of process should be.
I'll throw a few comments to that, and there's a number of us in the room here who sat on that committee. But I guess one of the things that came pretty evident is something that the CMGC had been in place for some time. And so to retweak it, so to speak, to work it through, looked like maybe it could come together pretty quickly, and just how complicated all the varying issues were, and we met at least monthly, and those were half-day sessions. And when we got to the finish line that we thought, it carried on another 6 months in wordsmithing. And yet, as I look back, I don't think there was anything that happened during that process that to go backwards on, I think, should be done differently. And one of the pieces, I guess, being mindful on that was one of the interest groups was the specialties. And when we got to one of our last sessions before it jumped into all the wordsmithing, I think there was a frustration that maybe their voice hadn't been heard on some given issues, and I know Carl was representing part of the specialties and was a little bit of a hands thrown up that at this juncture, they just don't feel like their issues were being heard, and that, again, going to the consensus piece said, stop. Give us the issues. What needs to change in this language that, again, not everybody's going to have everything, but, again, to come to a basic consensus. And that was put out there, and it was worked through and ultimately came into it. And so to me, those were the lessons learned, was the ability to take the time to make sure the given entities were being heard, and the consensus piece that now it's not something that has become a bill that, Lord willing, is suddenly going to immediately be challenged and going forward on. And again, that, as we wrapped it up in that particular case, was a great first step into a complicated piece. And I think on this particular issue, it's going to be similar. I mean, from the outside, we're all... Everybody at this table here is vested for different reasons that all are going to make this really good, and everybody needs to be heard. So that'd be my quick.
Thanks. Carl?
Mr. Chair, as one of those frustrated specialty contracting members, as Tom put it, while I recognize that, it was an enormous undertaking and an enormous time commitment on all the members participating on that. One of the challenges that I saw out of how that group worked is when things did break up into subcommittees or work groups, if we were to go down that same type of path to make sure that, as Tom had mentioned, all these various interests are represented, because for me, I felt that I lost track of part of that process when several different committees would meet. You don't know what's happening, what's being discussed at that committee level. And then when it all comes back together, you've got some summary, you've got some verbiage on paper. But at the same time, not everybody can do everything all at the same time. But if we went that way, to have some way to make sure that when there's consensus within that subcommittee, that there's also consensus in the whole committee of that work product. So we don't have pieces of something that don't fit.
So you're suggesting that we be careful in how we put those committees together to make sure there's a diversity of interests on the committee, but then that there be regular communication between the committee and the group as a whole?
Correct.
Mr. Chair, I have a question on that, please. As well. And this is maybe the horse before the cart. When we get to the end and, a bill is orchestrated, will our committee get a chance to review it before it's passed on, so that we have a chance one last time to take a look at it based on what Carl has offered?
We will do our best. So we send things to Legislative Council, and then they come back. But certainly... we will, once we get it back from Legislative Council, want to make sure that it accords with what we were hoping for.
Well, I was on the CCB board for 8 years, and I know rules were written, and they'd come back and say, oh, my gosh, this doesn't read right, or, oh, this precludes a whole group just the way it was written. And I guess that was kind of what I'm hearing that could possibly happen with this process.
Yeah, Patrick.
With the CMGC work group that they're discussing, not only did we have a final review, but, of course, there's no such thing as a final review of that process. The members of that group continue to work on that all the way through the legislative process, which went up until, I think it was the last month of session, was when that bill finally moved out of committee. And there was constant kind of sending it out to the people who had participated in that group, sending a revision process that lasted even after we had sent something to the Legislative Council and something came back. It was a continuous process. So I think certainly we'd be able to continue following it all the way through that. Yeah.
One of the real challenges with task forces, I don't know that it'll apply to this one, but and why task forces often have a bad name is people work hard. They do a set of recommendations or a report. It goes on a shelf. And nobody ever does anything with it. Once the committee, the task force, does its work, they lose complete control of it. I think it will be really important to keep the task force engaged as this moves into the phase of legislation. This is a very arcane area. You all understand it really well. I can't say that I do, certainly, and I can speak for my colleagues, it's the same thing. We're going to need you in there after the recommendation has been made to help legislators understand why these recommendations were made and why this is a real improvement. Yes, Ron.
Just in reviewing a lot of the materials for preparing for this event, reading the ODOT's provisions, and I had glazed over it honestly but never read it in depth, and it challenged me to go back and study it a little deeper, and what work has been done in Washington State as well. I'm optimistic that we're really building on a great body of work there, this bill included. There was some very good language in 782, and I think given the strength of that body of work, I think it's absolutely an appropriate starting place, but it also gives us a lot of tools to work with, too, to build towards that consensus. I'm optimistic we can get there.
Chip, did you answer? I'm sorry, Senator.
I think Chuck was in the queue.
Okay.
I just want to, I've seen lots of legislation that that comes to us all the time, and you say, well, did you get together, come as a group, discuss both sides, and come to a consensus on this so everybody agrees? It's so much easier to make a decision as a legislator when a group meets like this, comes to consensus. It makes it easier to support it as a legislator. And if the groups don't get together, then you have contention, and it's more difficult. You have to choose sides. So I think if this group that we've got here today can come to a consensus, it's just a greater effort to prove what we're going to work on in hopefully the next year, or I don't know what our timeline is, but I think the closer we can get to consensus and we all support it, it makes it easier for the rest of the legislators to support it, too. Mm-hmm.
Great.
One thing that, I'll talk to you about this after the meeting, but I thought I'd get this out there now. In the bill itself, it talks about diversifying the workforce, and I thought it might be advantageous for us to consider, perhaps at the next meeting, adding one person of color to our group, who a tradesman or woman. And so if any of you have somebody in mind that you think would be good for that role, if you wouldn't mind sending that name to the committee administrator, and perhaps we can, Michael and I could put our heads together and see where we stand on that at the next meeting, if that's okay.
Great. Yeah. And also, if any of you have suggestions of whom to contact from the other states, if you could give Patrick those leads, that would be very, very useful. You know, it sounds as if at our next meeting we want to hear from ODOT, hear from State of Washington anyway, just to get a, you know, get some background there. One of the things, so the bill calls for us to have our final recommendations in time for the 2015 session, right?
Correct.
It did leave open the possibility that if there is anything kind of en route to that, that could that might require legislation in 2014. That is also an option. Now, that's something we'll really need to decide at our next meeting because of our timelines for getting legislative requests in time for the February session. So if there is some piece of this that immediately jumps out at us that, yes, this is something that we would all agree we could do in February, and, you know, maybe it's small but important, then that is an option for us. But we really would need to decide that by November, our November meeting.
Mr. Chair, can
yes.
I?
Sandy.
I'd like to recommend somebody also. Dan Graham from the Northwest College of Construction has an open shop apprentice training. He spearheads, and I thought he might also be a very good member to bring on force.
Okay.
It's in my district, too.
Anything else, you know, in terms of the charge that, you know, comes to mind, or, you know, is there anything that's on the charge, is there anything that's not on the charge that you think we need to be putting onto the work plan? You know, any questions or, you know, potential areas of disagreement that, you know, that you think we're going to need to make sure we address. Yes,
Mr. Chair, I think it's kind of brought up here, but I'm fairly familiar with the Washington plan, and dealing with those apprenticeship programs in Washington, and also with the contractors there. They lack enforcement. And I think any plan for it to be effective is going to have some element of responsibility built into it. And I think without that, no matter what we would come up with that may look good, there has to be some element of that to make sure that it's followed through to the end. I think that's going to be critical from my perspective.
So is your sense that they lack enforcement because they don't have the capacity or because the legislation doesn't require it?
I believe it was never required, and when brought up, it's typically an issue of if we had the ability, we would like to do that as well. So I think both.
That's certainly something we could, you know, ask them about when they come. Yes.
So, Mr. Chair, I think the bill does address that, though, when we talk about incentive, disincentive. I think it is here, and I think it is an important subject of how that is addressed when we get into it. And certainly ODOT has a system that will be important to hear from their end and the success or lack of because of that, you know, Washington being one type. So I guess I would say it is addressed, I believe, in here.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, one other item that I think would be very important for us to have attention to is as we contemplate rules, requirements, and so forth through apprenticeship participation, we also need to carefully examine what are the hindrances, what are the barriers that we're working against while we say mandates or whatever we come up with to try to grow apprenticeship, we also need to be looking at what are the things that are opposing that? What barriers might we have in place that could be a tool to modify or adjust in growing apprenticeship participation?
I tend to agree with that, Mr. Chair, that to me the disincentive portion of this raises the hair on the back of people's necks, that there should be a proactive plan, that it should be an incentive plan. It's good for the apprentices. It should be good for the agencies. Mm-hmm. It should be good for everybody. And so I would like to see this as a program that's going to be great for the state and great for the workforce.
Yes, Mr. Chair, one other comment. I think, hopefully I'm not overreaching on this one, but one of the lessons going backwards on the CMGC that I believe ended up being quite a challenge in the end with a lot of the, as Patrick noted, all the engagement throughout the process of getting it to be a bill is not minimizing the interest on the public agency's side of this, because one of the key pieces also on apprenticeship is if we try to go too fast and we try to put percentages that are not currently available, it does add cost to a project, or it certainly can, and that some of those giving pieces that the risk we run if we do overstep that during the legislative process, making sure that I think ultimately the goal here is having a bill that goes forth and something that that is hampered from the public agency's unwillingness to accept what's being put forth. So again, another twist of the complications built within that. But I think that was one of the challenges on the public contracting bill that went forth, and Patrick may be able to comment on that, but you know, the different things working, I think, behind the scenes with Department of Justice and the wordsmithing and all those varying sorts of things.
I look at our co-chairs, and I realize that the co-chairs of that group, one of the challenges of that group was that we are working specifically to fine-tune existing law, and that we had attorneys as our co-chairs. We're on sometimes opposite sides of the issue, so yeah. That may have been a special case, and so some of that challenge may have been a special case.
And your co-chairs fortunately aren't that smart.
So. We're both committed to solving problems.
They were committed to trying to find, you know, the right font for their for the dots on the I's and the crosses of the T's. So, in some cases. But I mean, like I said, it there's a potential, you know, that this can get into that, and I think. He has kind of, like Tom said, learned the lessons of how that evolved near the end of the process. So.
To add to that, Mr. Chair, I think a TIG program could maybe be more successful from a contractor's and an apprentice's position, because at first it's a 4 to 5 year program. So if we have a flood in the pipeline of a high percentage of low skilled workers, then a lot of them are going to fall between the cracks. Whereas if we have a smaller group that we can work with, and then they move into that second year and third year and fourth year, we can continue to build off of that platform. And that just makes really good sense to have qualified first, second, third year apprentices. So, to that point.
Yes, sir.
On that subject, it's an interesting subject because it's something we deal with not in apprenticeship programs, but in schools too, isn't it? It's always that completion rate, and we're looking at, you know, it's not enough to start somebody in the process, but it's really, you know, those monies that are spent in educating our young people, does that pay off in the end? And so I think completion rates are definitely something that, you know, I know most of the major apprenticeship programs in the state, and, you know, they hold, that's something that I know as the carpenters, we watch very closely. You know, when you put the monies into a program, and there is a cost to it, you want to see that it's successful long term for the individual, because it doesn't benefit the industry if, like you say, Sandy, if those folks fall by the wayside. So we're really focused on the long term of the program. I mean, one other subject I'd say along that lines is there's a significant number of employers in the state now that have ongoing apprenticeship programs. And I hope whatever we do here, I'm confident whatever we do here, we'll do justice to those folks that have been involved in those programs for decades, really, and continue to mentor and bring up young people, those that don't go on to higher learning and choose a path through the trades. And something I think has been lost over time in this country is some of the dignity of the trade type of work, and not just that in the building trades, but other vocations as well. And I think a strong apprenticeship can do justice and to those trades.
Yes, John.
I just agree with what Ron just had to say. I mean, not every freshman that's starting at U of O or OSU or any of our other centers of higher education within the next week or month is going to graduate, and not everybody that starts an apprenticeship program is going to graduate. But I think we're doing a great disservice to ourselves and to the apprentices themselves if we're not watching the retention and the graduation rate in apprenticeship programs. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes back to the oversight that several people have spoken to. I think there has to be some sort of oversight mechanism in this legislation that looks at, you know, not only the use of apprentices on state-funded jobs, but the graduation rates of the programs that are participating. And if there's no oversight and there's no guardrails, how are we going to measure whether we're being successful or not? Mm-hmm. I think that's an important component of what we've been
really
charged with trying
really
to do.
I think this really is important, and it's something that really wasn't addressed in the bill. But, you know, the bill talks about numbers, really, and, you know, percentages, but you know, really, I think what we're interested in is creating pathways to success, right? And so what's important is, you know, getting, not just getting students into apprenticeship, or, you know, people into apprenticeship, but, you know, seeing how they succeed in that pathway to becoming journey workers and, you know, and perhaps contractors, you know, whatever path they choose to take. Gene?
I was just going to add that, you know, I strongly agree with what's been discussed here concerning the apprenticeship and evaluating what's going on. What I see with the incentives and disincentives is we also have to look at the monitoring of what's being trained, because we've noticed through the operating engineers that it can be real easy to pigeonhole somebody if they're good at one thing and not get them diversified. And so we maintain that by watching what work is being done, how the training is occurring, that they get more of a broad spectrum of training and become a better rounded individual in the craft. And it has helped. We've been involved in that in the last couple of years, stronger than before, and it's really made a difference with the apprenticeship individuals going out there in the field.
Yeah. Rick Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In order to know where we're going, might help us to know where we are.
Yeah.
Regarding apprenticeship, is there a way to come up with some sort of comprehensive evaluation of the state of apprenticeship in Oregon as it currently exists? I mean, from you all, the guys in the industry, and so forth. Maybe Patrick could compile something, but so that when we have people in front of us, like whether it's ODOT or Washington or whomever, we can ask questions specifically tailored about how did you get over this hurdle or how have you accomplished that. But for some of us who weren't in the on the field every day, it's hard to know exactly what we're trying, what we need to do to advance the ball. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's possible or not. But
well, somebody like who's offered to be a real resource to us is Steve Sims, who you know is with Boley, and and maybe it would be useful to have him at our next meeting just give us an overview, kind of a just a sense of where we are in terms of numbers, in terms of the structures that are in place. Yeah.
And I know in the past when I was working on this issue with ODOT, since ODOT is such a big player in the world of apprenticeship, I know that they had a quarterly report on local jobs, statewide jobs actually, by region, and that had apprenticeship hours. At one point they even had those broken down by ethnicity and other demographics. But if we could ask ODOT to get to the committee administrator those quarterly reports, I assume you're still doing them, and then Patrick could disseminate those to the committee after the co-chair and I agree that they'll be useful, if that's okay with everybody.
That's what Washington does, is they do a quarterly report at the Apprenticeship Council meetings, and they're able to disseminate the status of a project, whether it's 25% complete, 50% complete. And that's it's allowed them to become more proactive. I guess that's kind of my concern with the incentive and disincentive language, is typically that would imply that the job is over and no apprentices were used. Now we have to do something to punish you, and that doesn't bring back that opportunity. I like the idea of getting regular reporting based on the span of a job, and at some point if that achievement isn't being made, then something changes while that job is still in process. Often the paperwork that trails these jobs occurs after the job is over, and the lost opportunity can't be recovered, and it happens regularly. And so I think that's where some monitoring and compliance has to be really a kind of a proactive part of the process.
Mr. Chair, in the
yes.
ODOT process, and I've done ODOT work, we have to turn in monthly utilization reports, and quarterly they review it. And at the end of the job, if you were supposed to have 6,000 hours of apprenticeship and you have 5,000 hours, you do not get the payment that would have been given to you at X amount of dollars for those hours. You do not receive that money. So they do, ODOT does monitor it.
Just going back for a moment to the issue of completion, I would like to have a sense, not necessarily today, of what some of the barriers are, you know, going back to Carl's suggestion, what some of the barriers are to completion. I mean, you know, when apprentices aren't able to continue, what are the causes of that? You know, are there hurdles there that we can somehow address to get to more success? So if you could just be thinking of those, and I think it would be useful for us to compile a list of them and then make that part of the ongoing work. So what can, in doing the work that we're doing for this task force, is this helping to remove those obstacles?
And if I could, Mr. Chair, go into what you said, I think it sounds like, you know, having our next meeting all focused on what's the state of apprenticeship now with Boley, ODOT, and all the major players, I think sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at completion rates, I'd also be interested in the demographic breakdown of those completion rates, union, non-union, JATC, et cetera, so that we can see.
And region as well, mm-hmm. I think would be useful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are some interesting circumstances, you know, that we've dealt with over the last number of years with the recession and whatnot. We also need to be open-minded to, you know, there's new technology available for education and programs for apprenticeship training that we, you know, there's a lot of us that came out of construction from a different day and different way that things were done. And one of the things that comes to light as far as barriers during the recession years is there are some trades where the barrier to apprenticeship was lacking number of journeymen, comply with ratios. For example, there are people who were interested in a particular trade and they apply and are accepted into apprenticeship program, but the sole thing from keeping them from going to work is the appropriate ratio of journeymen to work with. We might need to consider some things that maybe they're not permanent, maybe they're even temporary, that when certain things happen, that we have some way to adjust or modify. Because if we have, for example, a program where you need X number of journeymen to bring in another apprentice, but for whatever reason, changes in the construction industry, the way we build buildings change, that that's not happening, that by itself can be what stops. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or on the completion rate, if you have somebody who's in a program and then you have recession years, and people aren't working, they leave for a different career, they go to a different state. Now you have an apprentice that you have to tell can't work anymore. Mm-hmm. So we'll need to really look at creative approaches to different circumstances as they arise so that's not detrimental to the apprentices.
Another barrier also is the,
Go ahead and then John.
Another barrier that I have seen is that in some of these programs, apprentice programs, Bowley has stated only so many apprentices can be in a program at any given time, which means they have to graduate from the program. Well, it could take quite a long time for somebody to come back and forth from an employer to finally say they don't belong in the program. Well, we have people that are qualified and should be able to get in there. It's a numbers game, which is another barrier. Because I know personally from my business, I would bring on more apprentices, but there aren't enough in the program.
I was just going to say that Steve Sims with Bowley can give a good breakdown of every registered apprenticeship program in the state, the number of people that participate, and then the numbers of female and people of colors and their graduation rates. I don't know if he's got an ability to break it out geographically, other than like in the case of the IBEW, where there's different locals and different JTCs around the state. Most of the locals are statewide. They're in the union construction JTCs. But if we build this monitoring out in the future, then obviously a breakout of regions around the state would be very helpful, I would think.
Okay, yeah, Brian.
I think one of the barriers to completion that I've recognized, again, with the Washington program, because I work with them pretty regularly as well, is when they've created a mandatory apprenticeship utilization and a contractor might come from out of town or what have you, and they've never been a training agent before. They've never had apprentices before. They sign a contract 25% into the job, they get a quarterly report and find out they're required to do apprenticeship. And unfortunately, those are the ones that I think hurt the system. They're the ones who tend to hire somebody because they're required to. They have no vested interest in the career of this person. It was almost forced upon them to participate because of a contract they signed. And ultimately, when that job is over, they're going to let that person go, and then it's up to that apprentice to try to find their way. You know, and hopefully the JATC would help them with that. But that is a difficult situation for an employer to be in, but also for that apprentice working for that employer.
Okay, well, I think we've laid a lot of groundwork, and I think we have a clear sense of what we want to do at our next meeting, which is going to be fairly aggressive, I think. But hopefully by the end of the next meeting, we'll have laid the groundwork of, you know, what is in this state, ODOT, perhaps Washington State, and then, you know, I think that can give us a clearer sense of where we head from there. Something that would be useful for you to think about would be, you know, mentioned doing work through subcommittees, what you might see as the appropriate subcommittees for our charge. And if you have any thoughts about that, if you could, you know, shoot them to Patrick, and he'll get them to Chip and me, and we'll have a conversation about that. I think that will be very important. So anything else for the good of the order? John?
What's the date of legislative days in November, just so we get that three-day block on our calendars?
It's Wednesday through Friday, November 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Yeah, week before Thanksgiving. Okay. Right. Wednesday through Friday before Thanksgiving.
Well, it's better than the week of Thanksgiving. Yes.
Well, we could...
So, and how does it work? Do we just get assigned a time, or?
Well, how it worked this time is we determined based on the 3 days this time around, the only time during those 3 days where we could even get the four legislators in the room together was this time. It was 11 o'clock on Monday, on the first day. So it's a pretty good likelihood that will remain true, and that the date will probably be
Wednesday.
11 o'clock on Wednesday the 20th, probably, but I'll have to confirm that.
Yeah, we'll let you know as soon as we can about that.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much for serving. Look forward to it. I'm sure we'll get to know each other a lot better before this thing is over. Thank you all in the audience for attending. And with that, we're adjourned.